Some parts of our planet are barren, inhospitable, offering, it would seem, no possible way to make a living. The deserts of the American Southwest appear to be one such place. But a few people have found work in this environment by harvesting the seeds of the plants that grow wild there. In recent years, a number of factors, including new fashions in home gardening, have made seed collecting a profitable, if arduous, business. In the second part of our series on working at the margins, NPR's Ina Jaffe has a profile of one man who makes his living in the deserts of southern Arizona.
If there were such a place as a desert jungle, it would look like Gary and Bernadette Miskernick's backyard. In the middle of the city of Tucson, Gary and Bernie, as she's known, have made an artful chaos of the spiky and silvery, fuzzy and flowering offspring of wild desert plants.
Down here's the seed shed. Hey, dog! Get out the yard, dog!
The garden's grown from just a tiny fraction of the seeds they've collected. Most of their harvest, as they call it, has been planted along highways or aqueducts or around housing developments. And some of it is still in white plastic bags stacked to the ceiling of the shed at the back of the yard. Gary reaches into one of the sacks and pulls up a handful of little black specks, desert zinnia.
It's not easy to collect, and people rarely do, and I think I'm the only one that has any right now. Stuff sells for $80 a pound. That's about 30 pounds, you know, so it's close to $2,000 worth of seed. And since I don't have anything in the bank, I have to have something. It doesn't look like $2,000 worth, does it? Looks like garden trimmings.
Until recently, Gary and Bernadette went on collecting trips together. Now Bernie stays home with their baby Luke, so she started a new branch of the family business, raising and selling plants she grows from the seed Gary brings back.
There are three different species of saltbush. 50 of them go to a woman that's working with the county for a restoration project.
What are those lovely little orange flowers over there?
Globe mallow. Well, you'll find out in the next couple days, but that's one of the few things that you'll be collecting. It's just a bad year for seed collecting. It's been so dry. But mallow has done wonderfully, and just seems to be resilient to the dryness.
It's always dry around Tucson, but this year is exceptionally bad. The worst drought, says Gary, in 7 years. That means he spends more time driving, looking for seed, than picking it. We cruise along flat two-lane roads, where emaciated shrubs and burnt-up weeds stretch to the horizon. The desert is beautiful in the morning and the evening, says Gary, but it's ugly all day long. Finally, there's something worth getting out of the truck for. It's mallow, as Bernie predicted. No one but a seed picker would look at these plants twice. They've lost their pale orange blossoms. Seeds now cling to clumps of stiff, spiny stems.
Normally, I wouldn't pick it green. But it doesn't look like I'm going to get much of anything out of this.
What happens to the seed quality if you pick it green?
That's less.
Picking seeds may be a misleading term here. It conjures up images of Hansel and Gretel plucking berries in the woods. Gary Miskernick harvests globe mallow with an old tennis racket covered in duct tape. He uses it to whack the seeds into a plastic garbage can. The tough stalks of the foot-high plant seem to bounce right back. If it weren't for the odd equipment he's carrying, he'd cut a real Wild West figure. The blue jeans and western shirt topped off with a beat-up cowboy hat and a bandana pulled up over his face. This mallow seed is itchy stuff.
It has tiny hairs all over it that are shaped like maces, the medieval weapon. The mace head without the handle. So that's why I always wear this kerchief too when I'm picking this.
But not gloves.
No, there's only so much you can do about it.
This really wasn't much of a crop, as Gary calls it. He describes the haul as enough to pay for gas. And maybe a few soft drinks at the Red Rock Bar, a tavern in a brightly painted trailer off the freeway between Tucson and Phoenix. Seed picking can be lonely work. The Red Rock Bar is where seed pickers get together. Matt Sir used to pick seeds with Gary a few years back.
There's a lot of good times in between the hard work. It's like field labor combined with camping. Gypsy style, yeah, and a little bit of outlaw, just for excitement.
Matt explains that the Arizona desert may look like the wide open spaces, but it's all either federal, state, county, or private property.
When you get to the specifics of where we pick, we're always on somebody's turf. I mean, it's very rare that you actually pick a seed that isn't technically owned by somebody, usually the general public out here, but somebody claims jurisdiction over that seed. And so, in a sense, we're always stealing for a living, but we don't like to look at it that way. I look at it as helping the plants redistribute themselves throughout the wild.
Matt, did I hear you say we're stealing all the time?
Well, that's what a plant wants. The job of a seed is to spread the plant. We are helping it. And most people seem to be in favor of more plants. Nobody objects to what we do as far as, you know, on an ecological basis. It's only when we get down to property rights and control and authoritarian issues that it's a problem. And so what do? Do you serve nature or do you serve the man?
That's a rhetorical question in this crowd, and it has grown to a small crowd of full-time, part-time, and used-to-be seed pickers. Bernadette has driven up with the baby. Guy has brought his friend Mishu. Rita's down from Phoenix with her 3-year-old son Joseph. Everyone gets back into their respective trucks and caravans up some dirt tracks to an isolated spot where we camp for the night. Camping out is another part of the seed-picking life. Sometimes it's for fun. Sometimes there's no choice. The search for a good crop can take you far from home. The next morning, everyone is back in their trucks and on the road by the time the sun clears the mountains. For Gary, it's another long drive, this time on dirt roads, to a patch of creosote near the Maricopa Wilderness. Yellow blossoms still cover the dark green shrubs. It's a couple of weeks too early to pick seed. But it's quiet here, and there's a breeze, and we linger.
I'm getting older, you know. I think last night sleeping on the ground was hard. I used to love it, and I woke up this morning with sore hips. I'm getting soft.
Gary Miskernik is 39 years old, and he's been picking seeds for 15 years. It's a rough business. There probably aren't more than 24 people who make a living at it, and most of them hire someone else to do the worst of the field work. But Gary hasn't been able to wean himself from any part of what he describes as a lifelong obsession.
Actually, I grew a gourd from seed when I was 4, and I still have that gourd. It became more serious when a friend and I in junior high built a greenhouse on my folks' house and started a little petunia and tomato business.
Gary describes the income from his current business as wildly variable, though most years he's made just enough to get by and not a penny more. Still, he doesn't seem to feel deprived of anything, and the aspects of the seed-picking life that many people would dread are what Gary values most. He finds limitless beauty in the harshness of the desert. He likes being alone for long stretches of time. He enjoys it when the temperature goes up over 105 and the way wildlife seems to regard him as just another grazing animal. He thinks rattlesnakes are interesting.
It's not like I've seen that many, but 100 or so. But every time you hear them, you know, it scares you. You always know what it is. And it's just absolutely fascinating. And boy, your attention just zeroes in on everything. You know, where's that snake? And it's fun. Watch out. Hold on. Stay real low. It could be Africans.
Africanized bees, that is, the so-called killer bees. A black cloud of them comes zooming toward us like a pack of Hell's Angels. We keep still. They pass us by.
Oh, man, that scares me these days. See, snakes is one thing. But bees, we got these African bees all over the South. Pitter-pat, my foolish heart.
Gary takes the swarm of bees as a cue to head back to town. But on the way, he discovers a good crop of thrion, a golden long-stemmed grass. A thick stripe of it lines the road like a stand of miniature wheat.
Oh, man, this is great. I didn't think I was going to hit anything this good this spring. You know, look how quick a trip changes. It's just nice and heavy, and it's valuable and good seed.
Gary gathers the seed with the enthusiasm of someone who's just found emeralds lying by the side of the road. He knows he can sell whatever he collects here for revegetation of a toxic waste site south of Tucson. Using a kind of wide-toothed rake, he combs the seeds from the stalks, but he doesn't leave them bare.
Here's what I just hit. The main part of it is still on the stem. Mm-hmm. You know, about the, I'd say 15 or 20% is dry right on top. And then down the stem, it's all still green, and this is all staying on. I'm just scraping off the dry stuff.
So there will be plenty of seed left for the crop to replenish itself next year. Though how good a crop it will be, you never know.
It's hard to plan in this business, you know. Keep your faith up that you're going to find something. Actually, I think it's why a lot of people who have tried seed picking fail, is that they go out and they're easily discouraged and they get into a spot that there's not much, and they give up. They say, well, the crop's bad this year.
But a few miles down the road, in the next valley, on the other side of the mountain, there may be a bountiful harvest in the desert, a reward for hard work and stubborn faith. I'm Ina Jaffe, reporting.